You're listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast, where we discuss current events, social issues, religious trends, and noteworthy news from a biblical perspective. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for tuning in to the newest episode of the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Soker, and this episode is being released on December 15th, 2022. And joining me this week again is Christopher Gardana, a good friend of mine who preaches out in West Texas. Christopher, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I'm glad you're back. Good to have you here today. This week, we're talking about a kind of a difficult topic, but we're talking about assisted suicide, which is also referred to as medical assistance in dying. That this is a practice that is rapidly expanding in Canada. And we're going to talk about an article that kind of goes into that. And it was legalized in that country a few years ago, and it's just been expanding since then. And with the way that our culture continues to devalue human life, this trend shouldn't be surprising and really something that we should be expecting at some point in this country as our country kind of moves in the same direction. So as Christians, we need to have an understanding about what the Bible teaches that's related to this. So we're going to discuss that in our episode today. For links to the story we're talking about, as well as other related materials, and also some other articles that we'll link to as well, those will be in the show notes for this episode at plainbibleteaching.com/podcast/12/15/22. Now for our story this week. Medical assistance in dying for people with mental illnesses has left experts worried. From Yahoo News Canada, medical assistance in dying, or MAID, was legalized in Canada in 2016. In light of the Carter decision, the Supreme Court of Canada struck down the sanctions in the criminal code that prohibited assisting a person to die. Canada has joined a handful of countries that now allow assisted suicide. However, after the Truncheon case challenged the constitutionality of death being reasonably foreseeable, the Parliament decided to revise their MAID legislation, and Bill C-7 came into force in March 2021. The bill not only expands who can ask for assisted death, but also allows people with mental illnesses as their sole underlying illness to qualify for MAID. Before, only those whose death was naturally foreseeable, called Track 1 patients, qualified for medically assisted death. These are the patients with terminal cancer and other diseases. The new law allows patients whose death is not reasonably foreseeable to qualify for MAID, Track 2 patients, given that the new safeguards in place are met. For instance, Track 2 patients require a minimum 90-day assessment period. The second biggest change introduced by Bill C-7 is that people suffering solely from grievous mental illnesses also qualify for MAID now. The law comes into effect on March 14, 2023. The recent rise in cases of vulnerable people seeking MAID in Canada the last few months has left experts worried as they think the expanded legislation will only make matters worse. Now, originally, arguments about assisted suicide, or what's described here as medical assistance in dying, had to do with people who were terminally ill and had no chance of recovery. However, since that has largely been accepted now, there have been calls to expand the conditions that would qualify one to engage in or to undergo this assisted suicide. So later in the article, it says this, quoting from Dr. Sonyu Gaind, the chief of psychiatry at Humber River Hospital and a member of the World Psychiatric Association, says, "I'm not a conscientious objector to MAID, but I actually personally feel that the expansion is irresponsible. Part of the reason I'm concerned about this is that what MAID initially came for, it's now drastically changing to become something else, and most people are unaware of that." The article continued and said this, that in April, the case of a 51-year-old was reported by CTV News. She had opted for medical euthanasia because her housing benefits didn't allow her to get better housing, which didn't aggravate her crippling allergies to chemicals. Another disabled woman applied for MAID because she couldn't afford to live. A few months ago, another woman experienced long COVID symptoms for 2 years, applied for medical euthanasia because her illness didn't qualify for the Ontario Disability Benefit Program. She stated publicly that MAID was exclusively a financial consideration for her. She couldn't afford to live without support. "We've set up a system, and this is what the headlines are showing, where people who have decades left to live and they are being fueled by poverty, isolation, and loneliness to seek maid. That's dangerous to me. So this person here, this Dr. Gained, does not object to medical assistance in dying or assisted suicide personally, but is concerned that this is being sought for reasons that are not medically related, such as poverty, isolation, or loneliness. Now, that was a lot that we've just read there. And before we get into any further discussion, Christopher, do you have anything that you want to comment on related to this issue or what we've just read?
Well, this is a subject that I wanted to bring up and talk about because it seems like it's been in the news and the headlines. You know, there are some people that are making fun of it, but it's a real thing. And I believe that I was listening to a statistic the other day when I was thinking of the subject that over 10,000 people have made use of this, end of life procedure in the state of Canada, I mean, in the country of Canada to our north. And then, you know, you said it might be on our shores or it might be at our door. And I was looking at a different article that right now, legally, there are at least 10 jurisdictions in the U.S., Washington, D.C., California, Colorado, Oregon, Vermont, New Mexico. There was a court order, and then the governor did an executive order or something. Don't quote me on that. You go look it up. Maine, New Jersey, Hawaii, and Washington. So you have at least 10 different legal jurisdictions within the United States, which are physician-assisted suicide is legal. Now, there are other states where it has been made absolutely illegal. I was looking at another article that said, I think 33 states where it's specifically illegal. But now I believe it's the state of, I think it's the state of Oregon. Again, don't quote me. You'll have to go look it up. It says there's another article here. It says medically assisted suicide in Oregon is no longer limited to residents. So they can actually have basically people just going there for euthanasia tourism, you know, basically going there to end their life because they know that state will let them.
Right. Yeah, I saw that you had sent that one to me that you think with the safeguards that would be in place for those who were trying to institute this, they at least have to be a resident. Well, now they're trying to expand this that, no, sure, you don't even have to be a resident. It's a lot like the states that are allowing abortion and you can come across state lines and have that because some states allow it now and some don't. This is the same type of thing. And you have some places in this country are wanting to try to keep this where it's not being done at all and keep this illegal. And there are other places I know this is what we need to be doing. And this is going to be a good thing. Now for the sake of time, because I believe we're probably going to, run into there's a lot that we could talk about here. Sure. So originally I figured we talk about what the Bible teaches about suicide itself before medical assistance and suicide. I think we're going to skip that. I'll have some resources in the show notes that kind of go into that. If, we can bring up some points that are related to that as we go on into this to discussion. But what I want to start with here is this question, because a lot of people who will say that this is a good thing, that are in favor of medical assistance in dying or assisted suicide or euthanasia or whatever word they want or whatever term they want to use for it. A lot of times they will portray this as something that is compassionate because, here you have this person who's suffering. It used to be that, here's a person suffering with a terminal illness. They're going to pass away soon anyway. And so
less than 6 months.
Right. And so this is just going to assist them in that. And now, of course, as we read in that article, it's being expanded where it's not just someone who's terminally ill, but someone who has some condition where their life is just not comfortable, or they have some mental condition where they're suffering from that. So this is being portrayed as something that is compassionate. What are your thoughts on that argument where people will try to say that this is a good thing because, this is something that is compassionate and caring for someone who is suffering?
Well, as you said, we're really more concerned with, what does the Bible teach about it? And as a Christian, our primary concern is the moral and the, you might say the theological element. you know, and not to say that we do not empathize with those who are dealing with pain and suffering. They're dealing with a disease. You know, it's incomprehensible to someone who hasn't gone through it. The physical pain, the emotional strain, you know, there are a lot of components there where I completely understand their desire to be relieved of that. But when you consider what the Bible teaches, and again, it doesn't directly use any term. That's one of the arguments people give sometimes for all kinds of things. Well, the Bible doesn't talk about euthanasia. Well, it doesn't actually mention euthanasia, but the idea of, you know, the ideas of murder are there, or killing, you know, and this would be you voluntarily letting yourself be killed. And you see examples of those who committed suicide in the, you know, in the Bible, and none of them were good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know? And again, that I would encourage you to put some of these in the notes, you know, so for the sake of time, but you know, the idea of what does the Bible teach about it? Well, obviously, it doesn't specifically forbid or condone euthanasia, but it does refer to lots of instances of suicide, as I mentioned. And we need to let the Bible aid us to discern between good and evil. Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 14, it says, "But solid food belongs to those who are full age, that is, those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil." And I find it really interesting, too. You know, doctors used to take the Hippocratic Oath, and that's another, you know, Wikipedia listing or something, maybe Britannica, but the idea of doing no harm, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think even specifically, because I was just looking at it again, just to kind of refresh my memory on it, because I just have a vague knowledge of what that, you know, oath was. But a part of that oath included not prescribing. It's one of the translations from the Greek says, "I will give no deadly medicine to anyone if asked, nor suggest any such counsel. And in like manner, I will not give a woman a pessary to produce abortion." So The two things that are being promoted today within the medical community, you know, go completely against even that Hippocratic oath, you know, to basically do no harm and do things that will only heal.
Right.
Again, that's not the Bible, but that's the medical community, and has been the practice, you know, for a few thousand years, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things that I thought of, and I, you know, didn't have this originally written down, but as you were talking, you mentioned the examples in the Bible of not medical assistance, you know, or medically assisted suicide, but those who had killed themselves. You think obviously of Judas, that was one. Obviously, he's not portrayed in a positive light. You have King Saul also, he's not portrayed as a positive light. But what's interesting in 2 Samuel chapter 1, you have someone comes to King David with news that about what happened to Saul. And what he said is that obviously we see from this account that he was, you know, not being truthful about what happened. But what he said was that in verse 9, "Please stand beside me and kill me, for agony has seized me because my life still lingers in me." And so this man says, "So I stood beside him and killed him because I knew that he could not live after he had fallen. And I took the crown which was on his head and the bracelet which was on his arm, and I brought them here to my Lord." So here you have, now obviously this is a battle situation, not exactly the same thing as someone who is, you know, suffering from cancer or someone who's suffering from depression or something like that. But here, this individual, in lying about what he said he did, he says that, well, here's Saul, he's mortally wounded, he's going to die, and so he asks me to kill him. And so David, just all he has to go on is what this man said. And so David mourns over what happens to Saul. But then he says in verse 14, "How is it that you are not afraid to stretch out your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?" And David called one of the young men and said, "Go cut him down." So he struck him and he died. And David said in verse 16, "Your blood is on your head, for your mouth has testified against you, saying, I have killed the Lord's anointed." So it's this idea that we think that, well, you know, someone is in this condition that, you know, that, you know, they can't survive, they can't live. And so I'm just going to help them by ending their life. And this is the same type of idea that, or the argument behind this is that, well, this is the compassionate thing to do, that I'm going to help someone. And if we're going to use the scripture to try to determine what we should think about this, this here is, you know, helps show us what an attitude is that, or what our attitude should be toward this, that this is not something that's good and not something that, well, this is helpful, that David didn't thank this man. It's like, well, thank you for helping Saul and end his
thank
agony.
You for having compassion and,
right.
and finishing him off. Yes.
Yeah. He was instead condemned because he killed the Lord's anointed. So yeah, though you have this compassion argument, and while we could say that, well, this is, you know, we don't want the person to suffer, or we don't like to see them suffering and all that can be true. But the way that you help someone is not to kill them. One passage that I thought of over in Proverbs chapter 31, it talks about how someone can be helped if they are in a position or in a condition like this. And it says in Proverbs 31 and verse 6, to give strong drink to him who is perishing and wine to him whose life is bitter. And this, you know, obviously is not talking about the way people use alcohol today with just, you know, wanting to get drunk, but this is the idea of using it medicinally or using other types of medicines. The principle is there that there are ways to help someone and try to alleviate sure. their suffering. But again, going back to what you were talking about with the Hippocratic Oath, what the doctors have promised to do, obviously that's not inspired, but it's kind of comes from or influenced by this idea that we're going to try to help someone, and you don't do that by prematurely ending their life.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, where there's life, there's hope. And many times doctors, well, let's say many times, a lot of the times, those in the medical community are wrong about a diagnosis about how long someone's going to live. I mean, I've seen plenty of examples where someone had been given, you know, you're not going to live more than a year, and 5 years later, they're still ticking. Mm-hmm. You know, and so maybe they have a chronic illness that they're having to deal with. But I even think of Job. Job's a good example of someone who suffered. And I think I was trying to get to the root of the issue here. And what it is our desire not to suffer, obviously, mm-hmm. in any way. And in fact, they've gotten it down so low to just financial hardship. You know, I can't afford my rent. I also saw another article the other day, and I think it was also in Canada, where a paraplegic who actually had won some medals in the Paralympics was trying to get a ramp installed, I don't know, at government expense, I don't know. And the government agent that was there to help figure that out was also suggesting that she consider this program of MAID. And right. here she is already, she's already adjusted to her disability and has actually won medals as a disabled person after being in, I don't know if she was in Afghanistan or wherever she was in the early 90s and lost her legs or something. And that's another article to put in the notes.
Yeah.
And but basically she actually wrote a letter to Justin Trudeau, you know, disparaging this government official who was out there instead of helping her get a ramp installed. You know, hey, have you considered offing yourself? Have
right.
you considered medically assisted suicide? Really? And that's the answer to people today. And yet Job, you know, he's a good example of one who suffered and it wasn't for anything he did. And, you know, I'm looking at some of my notes for Job and, you know, in chapter 6, he's saying that God would grant him that he would crush him in Job chapter 6. You know, and yet he didn't say, I'm going to go kill myself. You know, he suffered, but he endured. Mm-hmm. On Sunday, I preached a sermon based upon the Apostle Paul's pleading with the Lord in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. He said, I pleaded with the Lord. He said that I had this thorn in the flesh in chapter 2 Corinthians 12, verse 7. He says, to keep me from being conceited, a thorn was given to me in the flesh. And he says, I pleaded with the Lord that it should leave me, but he said, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. So you even have the Apostle Paul dealing with some hardship. And I get the impression from reading Galatians where he says, see with what large letters I'm writing, that even after he had obeyed the gospel, even when the scales fell from his eyes and he restored his sight, that later in life, he still had eye problems, and being someone so meticulous and you know, studious, it can be the most terrible thing to lose your sight or to lose your vision to where you can't read the parchments, you can't read the scrolls, you can't write your own letters to the different churches, you're having someone else write it, and at the end of it, you're signing your name. And you see that where Paul mentions that at the end of 1 Corinthians even. See here, I, Paul, have written this, you know. And I just, you know, but he never once thought, well, I'm going to glory in my weakness and I'm going to commit suicide. You know, he just said, I asked the Lord and he said, my grace is sufficient for you.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's reminded me of Philippians chapter 1, where he talked about, you know, what his hope was, because he knew his hope was beyond this life. And he said in verse 21 of Philippians 1, for to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. But he says, but if I'm to live on in the flesh, that will mean fruitful labor for me, and I do not know which to choose, for I'm hard-pressed from both directions, having the desire to depart and be with Christ, for that is very much better. But yet to remain on the flesh is more necessary for your sake. And so he, sure, you know, while he was suffering, he knew that it's going to be better for me once I'm not here anymore. Yeah, it's better for me to depart and be with Christ. And you know, those who are suffering, especially, it's very easy to see, well, it's going to be better, especially for those who have the hope in Christ. It's going to be better once this life is over. But even the Apostle Paul, as he's, you know, writing the Philippians, that as long as I'm here, I'm going to be as useful as I can be. When the passages you mentioned in 2 Corinthians 12, that he had the thorn in the flesh and he appealed that the Lord would remove it. But when that didn't happen, he says, you know, that his grace was sufficient for him. And I think something that you said earlier, and I think really is behind why this has become so accepted, or one of the reasons why it's become so accepted, is that people don't want to have to suffer. And that's going to be, you know, I mean, that's just a natural part of our existence here, that life, because we experience death, that life is going to involve suffering because things are not going to be perfect. That's why we long for the life to come. But one of the things that I thought of that is related to that, you know, obviously why this is appealing to people who would want to go through this is because they don't want to suffer anymore. But I think it says something about a society also when they are pushing this on those who are suffering, those who have to be taken care of.
Those who are the most vulnerable.
And even not necessarily those are the first ones, but the one you mentioned who was the Paralympian who, you know, was appealing for assistance in order to get a ramp. Or whatever installed in her home. And, you know, this person was someone who was, you know, perfectly able to live her life, had difficulties and had challenges.
She'd overcome those and was in a good place.
Right. And she was able to do that. But here you have, you know, a government agent who is saying that, well, now, you know, instead of doing this, instead of providing help for you, and we could, you know, that's a whole nother discussion
a whole nother group of articles that were basically, there was one man who was being guilted by his care worker, the nurse at the hospital, he was costing the hospital $1,500 a day. And would he not consider this because he's such a drain on the system?
Right. And that's where we're getting, where someone is seen more as a problem because they are in this condition. So it's not just the person who's suffering wants to escape the suffering. Sure. You have the people who are caring for them, or who are funding the care that's for them, or the, you know, government officials who are in charge of the purse strings, who are determining whether they're going to get this or that. They all have an incentive to end their care of that patient.
Sure.
And I think it says something about society that, you know, obviously is not good, that this would be the reaction, that these, as, and we're going to have some links in the show notes, but these are not just, you know, one random event that happened. Sure. This is something that's happening over and over.
Yeah, this is part of the system in Canada and in some of these states. And in the UK, it's the same way. I've been reading some other articles and it's just, oh, it's scary.
Yeah.
When you have an agent of the state coming to your house and say you aren't in your best mental state because you are suffering and they keep like drip, drip, drip of water, maybe you should consider, maybe, you know, and how many people are just saying, oh yeah, well, I guess that's what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the influence and I saw another article that was basically saying the same thing, that they were going to cut off their help if they didn't consider it. Well,
right.
When you're being helped by the state and then the state says, well, we're not going to give you your medical assistance because we think you need to do this. It's scary.
Yeah.
You know, from a biblical perspective, though, another verse in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 8 through 12, Paul says, we are hard pressed on every side, yet not crushed. We are perplexed, but not despair, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed, always caring about in the body of the dying of the Lord Jesus, that the life of Jesus also may be manifest in our body.
Yeah, you have a society that has completely turned away from God. And this is where it leads. And when you have, I don't want to get into discussion about politics here, but I'll throw this in here. But whenever you have a situation where people are looking to the state for, you know, for their dependence, that the state has become their God in a sense, because they are the giver of all good things. When James 1:17 tells us that God is the giver of all good things, that when you don't look to God in that way, but instead you're looking to the state in that way. And well, if they can give these things to you, they can take those things away. And you have this situation that you have people who are dependent now, and I'm not going to, you know, to criticize them because they're in this situation, but just society as a whole has we've built this situation now in the society where it's very appealing for some people to say that, well, it's just not worth it for that person to continue on anymore. And like you said, the more that this is suggested and pushed, that more people are going to give into this and see this as a viable option rather than for what it is, as something that is, you know, going back to that example with David and the one who claimed to, you know, assist Paul or Saul in, you know, in killing himself, that he destroyed the Lord's anointed. And those who were doing this, rather than caring for the person who is sick, they are destroying their life. Yet that's something that, you know, we'll give an account for.
Sure.
And it's something that I think is serious. We got one final question. Do you have any other comments before we get into the last question I had here?
Well, I just want us to remember that our bodies belong to God. You know, 1 Corinthians chapter 6:19 says, do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, who you have from God, and you are not your own? You are bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's.
Right.
You know,
yeah, that's another point as far as, you know, for us ourselves.
The biblical view, you know,
right.
So it's not my choice. I might prefer death, but just like you mentioned there in Philippians, you know, to me, to live is Christ, to die is gain, but in that order, you know, I'm going to do what I'm supposed to in this life. And when the Lord calls me home, then I'll be at home with the Lord.
Right. You know, one thing that I wanted to touch on here before we quit is that, you know, the article that we read at the beginning cited the idea of poverty and isolation and loneliness that people are feeling that is kind of fueling this. When we think about what the Lord has given us, especially when it comes to the local church, we have something in place in the church that kind of helps protect us from that. Do you think it's fair to say that the local church, as God designed it, is kind of a safeguard for putting ourselves or for becoming in this position where we would see this as a viable option if we were in the case of, of suffering, and what is it about the local church that kind of can help with this?
Well, it should be a safety net, like you're saying. It should be one of those things where if everyone's doing their part, if every member is doing its share, then no one should ever get to the point where they're thinking, I just need to die. I just need to go ahead and die. Nobody, you know, there's no point in living. You know, the verse, when I was looking at that question, Romans chapter 12, verse 9 and following, it just says, let love be genuine. Love, verse 10, love one another with brotherly affection, outdo one another in showing honor, you know, serve, rejoice in hope, patient in tribulation, constant in prayer. Verse 13 says, contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. You know, rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. That's where you're empathizing, you're caring for them in the good times and the bad times. You know, as far as it depends on you, live peaceably. You know, over and over again, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good, verse 21. And so there's a lot of principles there that if properly applied, as you said, as if we're working as the Lord's church, then we should be there for one another to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep, and, you know, with compassion, help them, you know.
Yeah. And to add to that, I thought about the example of the early church in Acts 4, where they were of one heart and mind. And for those who were in physical need or material need, they were cared for. They were selling houses and bringing the proceeds to the apostles. So from a poverty standpoint, that would help. And then what you're talking about with encouragement and things like that for those who are suffering and all that, you don't experience that isolation and loneliness when the church is operating as it ought to.
Sure.
So we're about out of time. So we're going to have to wrap up here, but
thank you for having me tonight.
Well, Christopher, I appreciate you joining me, and I wish we had more time to discuss this, but we will have some additional resources in the show notes for those who want to check it out. So we'll wrap up for this week. Thank you for listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. I hope you found this to be interesting, informative, and helpful. And for links to the story we talked about, some other news articles that we'll include in there, and then some other resources as well, those will be in the show notes for this episode, plainbibleteaching.com/podcast/1215-22. And if you have a moment to rate and review the podcast and share it with others, that would always be appreciated. And if you're listening to this, remember that we are also uploading video versions of the podcast to the Plain Bible Teaching YouTube channel. So if you prefer that, it's in that format as well. And if you are watching this on YouTube, like and subscribe to the channel so you can see the other videos we're doing. I've just recently started a new video series on 2 Timothy, so you can follow along with that, and there'll be other videos as we go on that will be added to that channel. And if you see a news story that you think would make for a good discussion, please email the link to me at andy@plainbibleteaching.com. Thanks again for listening, and I hope to talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others. Also, be sure to sign up for the Plain Bible Teaching Weekly Newsletter. This free newsletter will be delivered to your inbox each Friday with articles, podcasts, videos, sermon outlines, and more. Visit plainbibleteaching.com to subscribe today.